are listening to 99.5 FM. Up next, we have Eco Logic. Okay, it's coming up next. Stay right there. Don't go anywhere.
People, don't you love this earth? We share with everything that grows. Don't you want to taste freedom, peace in this life? I believe we can make it whole again. I believe we can make it whole. With a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paid paradise, put up a parking lot.
If they keep on following the earth, telling where we're gonna plant our seed, it makes me wanna cry.
Water are healthy air and water. Every day is Earth Day. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. This is Ecologic for Wednesday, June 26, 2024.
When your air or water are clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said.
Today's focus is what Congress just did to our health and safety and environmental protections. Our guests today are Diane DiRigo and the Nuclear Information and Resource Service, NIRS, and Kevin Camps of Beyond Nuclear.
Today's news segment covers good news for Texas mountain lions, and there are two items we thought you should be aware of, the Summer of Heat and the Trees Act.
We'd like to start our show with good news. Predators such as big cats and wolves, hawks, and sharks are an important part of any ecosystem. Sick animals are easier prey, so predators keep disease from spreading through a population. They're usually what is called indicator species, indicating the health of an ecosystem. If a predator population is present, so too are their prey and what the prey eat. Also, predators and prey help one another evolve. The prey have to get smarter and faster to escape, and the predators have to get smarter and faster to keep eating. When hawk expert Tim Gallagher was on Ecologic in August of 2009, he said that you can see that happening at your backyard bird feeders. But some humans don't like predators, consider them a threat or competition, and are often willing to disrupt an entire ecosystem by removing them, as has happened throughout North America and Europe. Especially with wolves and mountain lions, extermination has mostly stopped in the case of hawks. There is a movement to stop the extermination of wolves, mountain lions, and sharks, but many states still have actual laws mandating their deaths.
So it was a pleasant surprise to read an article from the Center for Biodiversity that linked to an article by Ariana Garcia on cron.com, reporting that Texas regulated mountain lion hunting and trapping for the very first time. Texas had been the only state with mountain lions that did absolutely nothing to protect them. The Texas Park and Wildlife Commission, TPWC, voted unanimously to ban canned hunting, which is where people, and we won't call them hunters, shoot and kill caged animals. They also require the big cats not to be held in traps for more than 36 hours. Texas is one of two states that allow recreational trapping of mountain lions, with no requirement to check traps, and the cougars often die in the traps. TPWC said the goal of the new regulations is to manage mountain lions in a manner that better matches the values and ethics of the majority of Texans. 91% of over 7,000 comments were in favor of the new rules. Yay.
Yeah. There are two items we want you to know about. The summer of heat rallies and civil disobedience about Citibank's financing of fossil fuel, and the pending bipartisan legislation to prevent deforestation of tropical rainforests. The New York Trees Act, which is S8898 and A9711, that's Senate 8898 and Assembly 9711. For more information on both, see our website, www.ecoradio.org.
Here are John Hall, Carly Simon, and a large chorus of other singers, including James Taylor, Doobie Brothers, Chaka Khan, Bonnie Raitt, and Jackson Browne at the September 1979 No Nukes concert, singing John and Joanna Hall's song, Power. That was John Hall, Carly Simon, and other musical greats singing Power.
Now we welcome our guests. Please introduce yourself. Diane?
Diane, you have to unmute. Okay, we'll start with Kevin.
Hello, everybody. My name is Kevin Camps, and I serve as radioactive waste specialist at Beyond Nuclear in Tacoma Park, Maryland.
Great. And Diane?
Diane DiRigo. I'm radioactive waste project director at Nuclear Information and Resource Service.
What did Congress do to us last week? Diane, let's start with you.
The Congress, so the House and the Senate, both very largely, nearly unanimous, passed legislation to promote and kickstart the nuclear power fuel chain. It passed a bill which hitchhiked a ride onto a very important must-pass fire bill. And this is an election year. There are fires across the country. And a 2-3-page fire bill funding for the next 4 years was on the docket in the House. They attached a bill that was a secret compromise between a Senate bill, S-1111, and a House bill, H.R. 6544, which was called the Advance Act. And it passed the House 393-13 and the Senate 88-2. And what it does is, I point out five major things. It's a nearly a 90-plus page bill. It promotes new nuclear power, small modular mythical magical reactors, as we refer to them, because there really are none right now. It promotes new nuclear power across the country and small reactors that could go to many different locations as opposed to big centralized stations, meaning that all of those sites could be de facto waste dumps. It promotes advanced fuel, which could include HALEU, high assay low enriched uranium, which is on the verge of bomb grade. Uranium-235 concentrations in nuclear fuel now, even high burnup fuel, uranium-235 is concentrated at up to 5% of the fuel. Bomb grade is over 90%. So this high assay low enriched uranium fuel would concentrate it up to nearly 20%, almost high assay, and it could actually become a high enriched. This is a serious proliferation danger, and so to add injury to, I don't know, just to make it worse, the bill also promotes export of nuclear technology and nuclear materials to other countries. So we're going to make the fuel worse, closer to bomb grade, and start spreading it around small reactors all around the country and around the world. It's a clear proliferation danger. It also directs the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to revision its mission to promote more than regulate nuclear power. And we can talk about why that's a really bad idea. And finally, it allows something that Congress has defeated 2 or 3 times in the past. It allows foreign ownership of nuclear power reactors, nuclear facilities. So we've got a pretty bad bill that passed, and Biden has said that he will sign it.
Does this mean that they want nuclear weapons all over the world? What is going? What kind of thought processes have they explained their thought processes?
I believe that the majority of the House and Senate either don't know or don't care about the radiation and proliferation dangers that they have enabled. I think they just didn't want to be told that they were to be said about them that they voted against a fire bill. And 4 or 5 years ago, the Nuclear Energy Institute made a concentrated effort to, they decided then, they hired a big lobbying staff, and they said that they're going to meet with every member of Congress, every senator and their staffs in the years to come. And that effort is paying off. This bill doesn't provide the money, but there were two bills that were passed in 2021-22 timeframe, the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act and the Inflation Reduction Act, that did provide billions of dollars in subsidies for new nuclear power and existing nuclear reactors. So the money's there through the Department of Energy and through these programs, and now we've got the promotional underpinning.
You know, we always like to have some optimism in our show. This is going to be a tough one. Kevin.
Oh, I think, no, we will continue to fight this back. We've already been on a very lopsided playing field. This is horrible. There's no question of it, but it doesn't deter. I mean, it took me a couple of days to absorb the level of power that the nuclear power industry has within the House and the Senate, which is bodes very poorly for future waste bills that we can be expecting to come down the pike. But we need to just keep what we're doing, and we need to reassess our strategies, and we need to focus more on the legislators and the decision makers to the extent that we can. We're going to have to figure out how to deal with it, but that's our challenge. I mean, the pendulum's going to swing back, and we need to have that happen sooner than later.
I hope it doesn't take an accident to make that pendulum swing back. I am so glad that NIRS, the Nuclear Information Resource Service, exists. I am so glad that Beyond Nuclear exists, because you guys, no matter where the pendulum is, man, you guys keep going and keep working and keep learning. Kevin, what does the whole promotion instead of regulation part of the new NRC, what does that mean?
It's a huge blow. It's like a step backwards 50 years in time to the days of the U.S. Atomic Energy Commission. So back in the 1950s, 1960s, early 1970s, you had the U.S. Atomic Energy Commission, whose mandate back then was not only everything about nuclear weapons, including the nuclear weapons test site and all the damage it did, but also nuclear power. And on nuclear power, the AEC, Atomic Energy Commission, was in charge of promoting the industry and supposedly regulating the safety. It was a schizophrenic mandate on the nuclear power side of things, not even to mention the nuclear weapons connection. And by 1975 or so, it was realized that the AEC had such a schizophrenic mandate on the nuclear power side and such a bad reputation in terms of the number of Americans that had died downwind of the Nevada test site, for example, that something had to change. And so the change was to divide up promotions. That was ultimately given to the U.S. Department of Energy, specifically the Office of Nuclear Energy. And believe you me, they are quite zealous about their nuclear power promotions over there. And they're very well funded by taxpayer dollars. But the safety regulation was supposed to go to the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission. That's been the mandate of the NRC ever since. Boy, do they fail in their mandate all the time. But the problem with this new law that Biden's about to sign into law is that it gives NRC carte blanche, really, to get rid of regulations that are getting in the way of advancing, to use their language, advancing the beneficial uses of nuclear power. The NRC does not need any more carte blanche to get away with murder on not protecting public health, safety, security, and the environment. So it is a really bad blow to our world, to the planet, to our society, to the anti-nuclear and environmental movements. As Diane said, we have to catch our breath and fight back as best we can. You know, you played Power from Musicians United for Safe Energy in 1979. Yeah. What's the context of Muse? It was the response of musicians and fans of music to the Three Mile Island meltdown. So, like you said, let's hope it doesn't take another nuclear catastrophe for that pendulum to swing back, but it often has. I mean, Three Mile Island put pressure on the NRC to actually do better. Not that they did much better for very long. Chernobyl certainly changed some things for a while. Fukushima was another pendulum swing for us, but our planet is only so big and can only, you know, withstand so many of these catastrophes.
And
so let's get it done with our own work.
Thank you. You're listening to Ecologic, WBAI's premier environmental show, right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org. I'm Donna Stein.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Ken Gale.
Now back to our guests, Diane DiRigo and Kevin Camps. Sorry, we need to do those station IDs.
Yeah, I remember.
I'd like to follow up on what Kevin said, if I could.
Sure.
Okay.
So the reason that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission was created, as Kevin said, in 1974, was to have a regulator. The Department of Energy is doing the promotion, and the NRC, Nuclear Regulatory Commission, was supposed to regulate. In Japan, the Japanese government did a report after the beginning of that Fukushima disaster, triple meltdown that continues today, dumping radioactivity into the Pacific and into our fish and flora and fauna. The Japanese government concluded that a major cause of the Fukushima disaster was the collusion between the industry and the so-called regulator. We already have the NRC as a so-called regulator, very much of a lapdog, and we're repeating that mistake here. It was only 2011, so 13 years of amnesia.
I remember being at an NRC public hearing in Westchester County a few years ago, and one of the people who lives there asked, how many health and safety exemptions has the NRC given to the Indian Point nuclear reactor there? And the guy goes, only 100. And everybody goes nuts. I mean, 100 of them? Health and safety? 100. And he goes, only? So what is the difference between that NRC and the current NRC?
Well, one of the things about the – oh, go ahead, Kev. I'll go after you.
Well, I happen to be broadcasting from Kalamazoo, Michigan, which is downwind of the Palisades nuclear power plant. And when you said that, Ken, it reminded me of something that one of the units at Indian Point and Palisades and Diablo Canyon Unit 1 and one of the reactors at Beaver Valley have in common. And the good news is that Indian Point is shut, so this issue is moot there. But Palisades, they want to bring it back into operations from closed status. Diablo Canyon, they were supposed to shut. Now they're not. Beaver Valley still operating. It's called reactor pressure vessel embrittlement. And it's an example of reactor pressure vessel embrittlement because of the neutron radiation poking microscopic holes in the metallurgy of the reactor pressure vessel so that it's very brittle and prone to fracture and catastrophic failure in an emergency. The NRC has been weakening those regulations for decades. And here we go. That was under the old mission of protecting public safety. So here we go. Now that takes a back seat to industry promotions. So it's a good question, Ken. What's the difference? But the difference is that now they have every excuse in the world to just let it go, you know. And the good news is, y'all shut down Indian Point through public pressure. It wasn't the NRC that did that. It was you at the grassroots pressuring your elected officials like Governor Cuomo to get it shut down. And you did. So we need to follow your example in all these other places I mentioned before the worst happens. But now our challenge has grown more difficult because Congress, including Senator Schumer, shame on him for even letting this bill come to the floor as majority leader, has now given the NRC more of a free rein to not protect public health and safety. So our challenges have grown more difficult in the last 8 days.
You mentioned the Atomic Energy Commission. Is that the organization that was in the Oppenheimer movie?
Well, the Oppenheimer movie was the Manhattan Project, but at the end of the movie, when Oppenheimer was being crucified in a back room office with no windows, yeah, that was the U.S. Atomic Energy Commission. And I think some precedents were set, even in the Oppenheimer crucifixion there, on how the AEC and later the NRC would conduct its hearings, you know, as much in the dark as possible with as little public notice as possible to get the job done, which is to promote the nuclear power and back at that time, the nuclear weapons industry. So yeah, that was the Atomic Energy Commission. You can see they weren't really prioritizing nuclear safety in any way, shape or form. And so, you know, here we are back in those days now. It's going to be a real challenge to, you know, turn Congress around, like Diane said, The nuclear power industry, the nuclear industry, as Alfred Meyer has said for years now, they're really the same industry, nuclear weapons and nuclear power.
And Alfred is with the Physicians for Social Responsibility right here in New York City.
Don't take it from us. Take it from somebody like Ernest Moniz, who was Obama's energy secretary, who in 2017, after leaving office, said, you know, we really need subsidies and regulatory relief on nuclear power because we got to keep this industry going because we got to maintain our nuclear weapons arsenal. And so not only was he in charge of nuclear weapons as energy secretary, that's kind of a vestige of Atomic Energy Commission days, but because he gave $8.3 billion to building two new reactors in Georgia in recent years, he was awarded a seat on the board of Southern Nuclear. So he's making some money on his, you know, public service, so to speak. So the ties between nuclear power and nuclear weapons are out in the open now. They always were there, but the government lied about them, going back to Eisenhower and Adams for peace. But now, you know, the top levels of our government are saying, you know, it's one and the same. And I think there's a lot of truth to that, you know, in the big context of the state of the world, which isn't great. I think Congress and the Biden administration are hearkening back to the Cold War days and doubling down on our past bad behavior as a society, as the United States of America. We're in competition with Russia. We're in competition with China in terms of selling reactors or giving them away, in terms of a new arms race. And, you know, it's right there in the bill. China and Russia are singled out that they are our adversaries. They are our adversarial competitors. We need to outcompete them, even in the nuclear power realm. Why? To make friends with other countries in this game of tug of war in terms of alliances. This harkens back to the 1950s, this stuff.
Or in World War One, it harkens back to that too. Diane, you wanted to add something.
Well, I wanted to say two things about the Oppenheimer movie. I actually laughed at the part where there were a three-judge panel was judging Oppenheimer and not providing him the information on which they were making the judgments. When we intervene against a proposed new reactor or an amendments to reactors or other facilities, it's still a three-judge panel that can have secret information, and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and the company advocating the change or who is applying, they're 2-1 against the critics. And so we, the interveners or the people trying to stop or change the action. And so it's was rigged way back then. I think what Kevin said is it presages what's happening now is true. The other thing I want to say about the Oppenheimer movie is that it did not give any hint or clue as to who was downwind of those detonations, those nuclear weapons going off, the very first ones. And the people downwind, the Trinity downwinders, have been for years working to expand the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act and extend it because it's compensating people who are downwind of U.S. government testing, uranium miners who unknowingly were in the mines digging up uranium, inhaling, bringing the uranium home to their families, etc. So there's been some compensation since the 90s, but now it's expiring. And so the Radiation Exposure and Compensation Act, S-3853, is still a live bill that we need to get brought to the floor of the U.S. House. House Speaker Johnson has been stalwartly refusing to bring this to a vote. It's pretty likely that the House would approve this bill, and it was already passed twice in the Senate to extend the time period and to expand the number of the locations who were downwind of nuclear tests and nuclear detonations and uranium miners. So it's S-3853, and get your congressperson to get on Congressman Johnson, the speaker, to bring it to the floor. We're still at that stage. And so it's ironic that Johnson won't even bring this to the floor when this other bill sneaks in, secret compromise, passes huge margins in both the House and Senate, and yet they can't even bring the bill to compensate people as a result of the existing damages. They can't bring it to the floor and provide relief. This would kickstart a whole new round of that same nuclear fuel chain.
Two senators, Markey and Sanders, and 13 representatives who were willing to vote against the fire act and to keep this away. What is Congress thinking in terms of health and safety? Are they thinking about it at all? Are they coming up with alternatives now that NRC has no regulatory mission whatsoever?
Go ahead, Kev.
Well, I'm glad that Sally brought up the no vote. So, you know, hats off and huge thanks to Bernie Sanders and Ed Markey. I'd just like to point out that Ed Markey, if you get a chance, check out his floor speech against the ADVANCE Act. It was powerful. It was 17 minutes long. He's been a nuclear power and nuclear weapons watchdog in Congress since 1976, going on 50 years. So, you know, he's a national treasure in this regard. The Democrat who voted against the House version was Doggett of Texas. You know, huge thanks to him. There were a dozen Republicans who voted against. Who knows what their reasons were? They might have been voting against the fire protection, for all I know, because Republicans are almost to a member usually pro-nuclear power, even though they're supposedly fiscal conservatives. That's a joke. I mean, like Diane said, the figures on how much money the nuclear power industry has gotten through Congress just in recent years, just the two bills she mentioned. NERSC did a great analysis on the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022. Shockingly, the figure for nuclear power subsidies is in the realm of $380 billion. And the climate...
Billion with a B.
With a B, $380 billion if it's all exploited, and believe you me, they will try. And then on the other side, 360-some billion for climate mitigation. So in this supposed climate bill, nuclear power got more money than climate mitigation. Of course, the industry claims it is climate mitigation. Right. It is a dead-end mistake. That is a fatal mistake. If we spend this much money and waste this much time, let alone the dangers of nuclear power itself, we are not going to solve the climate crisis. What's that going to look like? Then there's no money left and there's no time. The climate crisis is not solved. And what does nuclear power look like in a climate destabilized world? It looks a lot more risky than it has been in the past. Imagine extreme weather created nuclear disasters.
All right. One thing that I get really often from people is that we need nuclear power because we need to stop fossil fuel. And they don't understand that from the beginning of mining the uranium to the end of it, there is a need for them to have fossil fuels to cool the cooling towers. What are we going to do if there's no electricity to cool the cooling towers?
Fukushima. Then they're also right on water, which is rising, and hot water doesn't cool reactors, so they shut down more than they used to because of those issues.
I think there's a really frightening level of misunderstanding and of denial. For example, a few years ago, Texas had a huge, in the middle of the winter, power outage. Right. And the nuclear reactor actually closed. Now they're arguing because we could have these outages, we want to build new nuclear. And there are proposed new nuclear facilities in Texas using the very argument where nuclear did not serve the purpose. So,
and how long will it take to build those? At what cost? And what money are we diverting away from real storage, real clean energy, solar, wind?
Exactly. Nuclear steals the resources that we need for true climate answers, the wind, the solar, better battery efficiency, and programs to the nuclear industry is actually fighting rooftop solar in many places, trying to make it illegal or taking away the subsidies in a number of locations. Groups that we work with around the country who've been challenging the nuclear threats have had to move to the side and start fighting for renewables in a more direct way, because there's a ongoing tension between the renewables and the nuclear industry. Often the renewables industry doesn't want to criticize nuclear because maybe they'll get some crumbs when the nuclear industry gets its massive amounts. And at one point, the Wind Association did kick the nuclear members out because of actual aggression against wind that the nuclear forces were waging.
Well, we'll be back with our guests in just a few minutes. We encourage you to participate with Ecologic as a voting member of the station, WBAI. If you contribute $25 by June 30th, you are in. WBAI buddies are also voting members. WBAI is one place you can go to hear the voices of the people, listener-supported radio. There are many viewpoints. We bring you discussion and experts like you hear today that you won't hear anywhere else, at least not in depth. This is your media. Sure, we ask for your donations. Isn't that better than when media companies take their dollars from influencers with corporate money? Yep, we think so too. So please be generous with your support. Whether you request a thank you gift or join us as an Ecologic BAI buddy, it all works to keep your station on the air. We appreciate all our listeners, and we appreciate when you show us that you want us to stay on the air.
Your donations help to ensure that our transmission tower rent is paid so that our on-air broadcast is uninterrupted. Every dollar you contribute goes directly towards sustaining independent journalism, empowering grassroots initiatives, and fostering a sense of belonging in our community. Together, we make a difference through the power of community radio. Please support WBAI. Go to give2wbai.org.
We appreciate your belief in the power of grassroots media and this radio show. Your contribution allows us to go forward. We are particularly grateful to our Ecologic BAI buddies who help ensure that the station's bills get paid every month. Please donate now so you can be proud of having done your part to keep Ecologic and WBAI on the air.
Just as change doesn't happen unless activists take the steps to make it happen, media doesn't just stay on the air without your action either. In this case, your financial support. Please go to give2wbii to make your donation or send a check or money order.
And to let us know you are a listener, we'd love you to go to our website and sign up for our email list. You'll be sure to hear of upcoming shows.
WBI's rich wealth of unique, insightful, informative, entertaining programming allows you to enjoy public affairs shows, art shows, to health and science shows. 168 hours for you each week. You'll hear voices on WBI that are left out of mainstream media. Please do your part to help us bring you incredible programming. Go to give2wbi.org to make your donation, or you can send us a check or money order.
When you choose to become our Ecologic BAI buddy, you're giving us a reliable source of support that we can depend on, just as you can depend on WBAI-FM. We're here for you all the time, and you'll be helping to ensure that we stay here. Just $10 or $15 a month, more if you can, enables people to listen wherever they are.
When you donate, please let us know if we can thank you on the air. We appreciate all of our listeners, and we'll thank you publicly if you'd like, as soon as we can.
And you're listening to Ecologic, WBAI's premier environmental show, right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. I'm Donna Stein.
I'm Ken Gale.
And I'm Sally Gellert.
Now back with our guests.
What would you like listeners to do, and what are the solutions to this? Diane?
So we've got a website, www.NIRS, Nuclear Information Resource Service. And at the top, there's an action, take action tab. There's also a join the email alert list. We send from 0 to 3 emails a week, depending on how many crises we're facing. We also can do state level alerts. If you've got actions going on in your state, we can alert our members and our activist allies in those states. So right now, we're still pushing for folks to work to get the RECA, Radiation Exposure Compensation Act, brought to the floor of the House. There's a banner on our website with more information on that. And people need to keep their spirits up because it's pretty dismal. But it's always been pretty dismal. And now it's worse, and we do need to figure out a better strategy. But I think it's most important, especially with so many different assaults, you know, things going on around the world, pollution and wars and all of that, that we keep in mind that we actually can make a difference, and we have made a difference. I mean, there was a proposal for thousands of reactors in this country, and there are only, you know, a little over 100. That's bad enough. But I personally have worked to fight nuclear waste dumps, unlined soil ditches for nuclear power and weapons waste. And we've stopped over 34, 40 of those dumps that were proposed around the country because people educated themselves, used their own common sense, did organizing, and took action. So whatever piece of it's good for you, if you're an artist, do a flyer, help us out with some social media spreading. You know, there's all kinds of ways, whatever you like to do, that's what you need to do.
Now, one of the solutions is this show and shows like it that are bringing the information to you, our listeners, and offering you the ability to be and make a difference. So make those phone calls, let Schumer and whatever your electeds are in your
right now, we want
area.
House members to get Johnson to bring the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act, RECA, to the floor. And then we've also got to educate all of our reps. We've got to actually have meetings with our senators' staff and with our senators when they come into the district about our dissatisfaction, our how mad we are that this has passed and that we don't want new nuclear dumps. The next target is to target nuclear, supposedly interim nuclear dumps, and trigger 40 years of nuclear transport on our roads, rails, and waterways. Maybe I'll let Kevin go on about that.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about educating members of Congress, and a very live issue is that Diane and myself and a coalition of anti-nuclear activists across the country have been fighting these consolidated interim storage facilities targeted currently at New Mexico and Texas. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission approved those licenses a couple years ago. Our side beat them in court. Now the other side is taking it to the Supreme Court. And so we don't know how the Supreme Court's going to react. Are they going to take the case? Are they going to deny the case? Either way, if our side prevails in court, you can count on this same nuclear industry lobbying juggernaut to work the Hill, as they have been for years, to try to get the law changed so that our court victory goes away. They've done it before on different issues. So we need to educate Congress, every single member, as to why these consolidated interim storage facilities are not a good idea. For one thing, they're interim, supposedly, which means all of this 40 years of transport, we're talking thousands of shipments of high-level radioactive waste, probably through a community near you, very high risk, would be for no good reason whatsoever, because someday it's going to have to move again, perhaps right back to where it came from in the first place. It makes no sense. It's very high risk. And besides that, there's a lot of talk these days, even in Congress, even in the Biden administration, about environmental justice. Guess who lives on these transportation routes? Low-income people of color communities. Guess who lives at the targeted dump sites? Low-income people of color communities. Specifically in Texas and New Mexico, these are Latinx communities on traditionally indigenous lands. I mean, New Mexico is a majority of minorities. The minorities, the indigenous population and the Latinx population, are a majority of the population of New Mexico. So guess where they're targeting for these two consolidated interim storage facilities? New Mexico proper, and right on the border of New Mexico. I'm talking within 0.3 miles. That's the Texas dump. So This is environmental racism. This is radioactive racism. We need to stop it. And we need to educate members of Congress that when we win, because the law is on our side right now, don't let the industry lobbyists convince you to change the law and pull that rug out from under environmental justice, this hard-won victory. That's our challenge.
And to their credit, both governors of both states have come out against these projects. And meanwhile, the Department of Energy is throwing all kinds of money at quote-unquote trusted communicators to convince everybody that this consolidated interim storage is a good idea.
Now, are you guys saying, Kevin Camps and Diane DiRigo, that the listeners of Ecologic and WBAI have the power to make things better?
Absolutely. Who else?
Join together with all your colleagues.
New York, actually, I was going to bring us back to New York, and I understand that Governor Hochul has just declared her support of nuclear power, which is a complete mistake. I want to say something to New Yorkers. I'm from Buffalo, from Western New York, 30 miles upstream and upwind and south of Buffalo, so draining to the Great Lakes, is the West Valley Nuclear Waste Dump. The West Valley site was the only place in the country where irradiated nuclear fuel, quote, spent fuel from nuclear reactors, was brought in from Indian Point, from the Ginna reactor north of Rochester, from old reactors in Michigan, the earliest reactors, sent their irradiated fuel, and it was traveled on the roads in water-filled containers. Now there's not water. But it came to West Valley. They chopped that up, the hottest part of the fuel chain, dissolved it in acids and chemicals, and extracted uranium and plutonium that was supposed to be used for more nuclear power fuel, but it never was. It did go to the Department of Energy. It messed up facilities that processed uranium in Ohio and gave really high doses to workers there. The workers at West Valley were the highest exposed workers in the country. The Cattaraugus Creek from West Valley that drains to the Great Lakes was the hottest radioactive water in the country for the years that the reprocessing took place. This is the only commercial fuel, irradiated fuel from nuclear power, that was reprocessed in the country. It was an abysmal failure. New York is holding part of the bag. New York owns the site. The Department of Energy has come in to try to clean it up, but we have to go grovel at Congress every few years to give us money to keep it from getting worse. It's taking active maintenance to keep the burial grounds there from eroding into the creeks that gush into Lake Erie. And New York, to even AOC is supporting nuclear. Gillibrand is supporting, was a supporter of S-1111, the predecessor to the bill we just discussed, 8-